Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, May 22nd, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Sudanese civilians wonder if warring parties can implement the new short-term ceasefire agreement.
They do absolutely welcome this ceasefire, but I have to say this also. They are very concerned that the two parties, they may not commit to this agreement.
Zambia's vice president endorses Africa's mediation in Russia's Ukraine war. A new study says police are among the top human rights violators in Uganda. Uganda's parliamentary speaker appeals to the East African community to support its anti-LGBTQ bill. Former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar wants to call 100 expert witnesses to support his election fraud claims.
The demand of the former vice president is that the election does not comply substantially with the demand of the Electoral Act, that the election was hugely compromised.
And Liberian Senator Frank Johnson accuses President George Weah and others of sending supporters to interrupt Johnson's Sunday church service. We'll also get the reaction of the ruling party. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Francis has called on Sudan's warring parties to lay down their weapons and give dialogue a chance to end the suffering of the civilians. Representatives of Army Commander General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Rapid Support Forces leader General Mohamed Hamdan Daglo signed a short-term ceasefire agreement over the weekend in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Mohamed al-Tahishi is a former member of the Sudan Transitional Sovereignty Council and a citizen who says he refuses to flee the fighting just to save the country from collapsing. He tells me he is not sure if the warring parties can uphold the ceasefire agreement, but he says the Sudanese people would welcome any proposal that could bring relief.
About the reaction of the Sudanese people, and very welcome. Those people very desperate. They lost hopes. They fallen down by this very sudden conflict. And they lost everything. They lost loved ones, they lost properties, they lost their access to the services, they even lost a right of movement to escape the capital. They do absolutely welcome this ceasefire, but I have to say this also. They are very concerned that the two parties, they may not commit to this an agreement. They do have an agreement for 72 hours before we had that and never implemented. And we had this as well.
Do you have confidence that the army and the paramilitary group RSF will respect the terms of the ceasefire?
I'm not sure about whether or not the military and RSF could implement the ceasefire agreement. I am not sure about that. But what I am sure about it is that the Sudanese people desperate for a ceasefire that can allow them to move and to protect their properties and to get access to the services. That's not only for the vulnerable people like children and elderly. All the people are very desperate to get a rest, to get a ceasefire that can really, really have a peace in their mind and have a one night sleep. That's what I'm sure about it. But honestly speaking, what I've been observing, the RSF, the Sudanese army, are determined to continue the fight until they can achieve their goals to get back to the power again.
How would you describe the current situation on the ground in Khartoum? Would you say that the fighting has stopped? Are people allowed to move around?
The current situation, as I am speaking, They are fighting in many, many areas in the capitals. And since this morning, obviously, the military air plan drop bomb pumping areas and strikes from many, many civilians areas. It isn't an easy. People taking a high risk to move because there has no choice only to move. People seeking for very important and emergency health care, and people looking for food, people looking for medicine, people looking for their lovely friends being missing for a long time. So people are moving, not because there are a right of movement, but because people has no choice.
Mohamed Al-Tahishi is a former member of the Sudan Transitional Sovereignty Council and a peace fellow at the Washington, D.C.-based Public International Law and Policy Group. He was speaking with me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Africa's efforts to mediate in the Russia-Ukraine conflict must be applauded because the continent has the capacity to negotiate with the two warring sides. Zambia's Vice President Mutale Nalumango told VOA News reporter Kwangu Liwewe that Africa is part of the global village and has every right to mediate in international disputes, especially those that have impacted the continent.
Any initiative to try and bring peace in any situation is welcome, including African initiatives. If the African leaders can sit and say, yes, we can negotiate, we know the issues enough, we will go in and help, because we are saying instability anywhere is a threat to stability everywhere. That's my president saying that. And therefore, we are equally impacted. We are equally concerned with the Ukraine-Russian war. Don't say, what good can come out of Africa? Well, something good can come out of Africa.
And African solutions for African problems, the bone of contention is Sudan is on fire, the DRC is on fire. Let's sort out our continental issues first.
That is not the way you think. You don't have to say, we must sort out here. Yes, I think Africa has not stayed away from these conflicts within. They have been trying. But remember that the conflicts within are not international. The conflicts you are talking about are different. It's brother against brother within the same territory, within the state. The other one is the state against the state. So the dynamics differ, but Africa has not stayed aloof in trying to harmonize within the state. So I wouldn't give you for a fact that Africa is today doing this particular thing in the Congo, but you think you have had initiatives, including some nations, going right there physically to try and stop the conflict. So Africa is trying.
That was Zambia Vice President Mutale Nalumango speaking with VOA News reporter Kwangu Liwewe. A new report by the Uganda Human Rights Commission says the police are the top human rights violators in the country. The report accuses them of attack on freedom of expression or the right to protest, as well as arbitrary arrest and corruption. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala.
The police ranked number one in the violation of human rights in Uganda, according to the 2022 report of the commission. It says of the 700 cases registered, the police are responsible for at least 2% of the complaints, followed by 25% committed by private individuals, and then the Ugandan army. Ruth Sechindi is a commissioner at Uganda Human Rights Commission.
Violations of torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment topped the list at 277. These were followed by deprivation of personal liberty at 271. Complaints against child maintenance were third in line at 88. And then there was also deprivation of property at 44, deprivation of security of person, 28, deprivation of the right to life, 27. That means there were people who were killed.
Other violations committed include the denial of the right to education, to a fair hearing, and other individual liberties. The commission also found out that there was overcrowding in prisons and some minors were detained in the facilities along with the adults. The report also notes lack of gender parity in governance, despite the rising number of women leaders in the country, including the vice president, prime minister, speaker of parliament, and ministers. Speaking at the launch of the report, Uganda's Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister, Norbert Mao, blamed the violations on lack of full knowledge of the law.
The police believes that when you write to inform them that you want to hold an assembly, you're asking for permission. But the permission is in the Constitution. And unfortunately, when they come to express their disapproval of your gathering, they don't talk to you. They communicate through blows and kicks, and which means they actually don't know what the law says.
Mao says the government will sensitize men in uniform and the public about rights practices. For VOA News, I am Gume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, May 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson Omale Sports. Nigeria's presidential election tribunal continues hearing challenges to the February 25 vote today, Monday. Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, the candidate for the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, and one of the two petitioners, has asked the tribunal for 3 weeks to call 100 expert witnesses. Abubakar is challenging the results, along with Labour Party candidate Peter Obi. Kola Olubadinya is the spokesperson for the campaign team of the former vice president. He tells me that the three-week request will not interfere with the May 29 inauguration of President-elect Bola Tinubu.
The former vice president and the presidential candidate of the People's Democratic Party in the February 25th presidential election is going to call about 100 witnesses, cutting across over 197,000 polling units. And as such, their movement to Abuja, as well as the assemblage of these witnesses, will require time.
But wouldn't that interfere with the inauguration of the new president-elect, Mr. Tinubu?
Well, as you know, the law doesn't say that Senator Bola Ahmed Tinubu cannot be inaugurated. That's not what the law says. However, we are aware, and Nigerians are aware, that there are matters before the election petition tribunal. And at any point in time, where decisions are taken and the matter is referred to the Supreme Court, and whatever the Supreme Court decides will be binding. But as we speak, it has no impact, or it has of no effect going by our jurisdiction on the process of jurisprudence.
So what likely outcome is the former vice president looking for?
The demand of the former vice president is that the election does not comply substantially with the demands of the electoral statute books, the demand of the Electoral Act, that the election was hugely compromised. And the assertion is Article 1, the election, and where that doesn't stand, then there will be cancellation of the election.
Kola Olubadinya is a spokesperson for the campaign team of former Vice President Atiku Abubakar. You are speaking with me from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Liberian Senator Prince Johnson, who is also bishop of his own church, says supporters of President George Weah's ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, interrupted his church service on Sunday. He says the intruders were sent by President George Weah, Vice President Joe Howard Taylor, and former Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi. Johnson tells me that he started getting threats soon after he announced last year that he will not support President Weah's re-election in October this year.
I mounted a pulpit to preach, and I was told that over 30 hoodlums, blue beret, the CDC, the banners, MPP, CDC, banners, they were gathered at one place where they cook our native food, GB. So I thought, they said, we're not near the church, and we are far away. Leave them alone. But before I could even open my script, they were right to the church. Some of them entered right before the church. They stood and barricaded the whole entrance and singing and disturbing the whole church. Many of them had, they shot single barrel pistols under their clothes. People saw it all. I met the people, I went there, and I tried to tell them, why are you looking for trouble when there is no trouble? Now, when you speak out of my right, you want to kill me, are you not bringing trouble between me and my country and the regime? You are bringing trouble.
You said that the people who attack your church were sent there by President Weah, Vice President Joe Howard Taylor. You even mentioned Eugene Nnamdi. What proof do you have that these people were sent there by these individuals?
Eugene Nnamdi has been speaking the issue during the strategist of the CDC, and Joe Howard Taylor called me a war criminal, that they are protecting all kind of things to say. Mr. President himself called me a killer, a duper, a blackmailer. You know, when the president of the whole nation calls you to me, everything that happening, he doesn't talk, he's silent. Every evil thing happening, they're quiet about it. And accusing him because this is his government, and when the vice president calls you that kind of name, they are all together in the same boat. And when the president called me killer, the murderer, I mean, a killer is no longer needed in the list. But when I supported them, I was the Holy Ghost. When I give my support, I'm a killer. So according to them, they don't want killer in the list.
Senator, you keep referring to war. You made several references to somebody wanting war and you don't want war. How does this lead to war?
Jim Butty, you know, war can be in many forms. You can have economic war. When the people are suffering, cannot find food, the world of hunger. So when you lead a group of hoodlums to my church with pistols on their clothes, with knives, and they want to kill me and my people in the church, they rob the whole church. If we want to fight back, it was not mature to avoid them, to call police and lock the door on them. It was a fight back. The fight between two opposing forces is a war by itself. That may lead to our people coming from Nimba to come defend me. That will lead to their people coming. This is not called for Jim Butty. That's why I said about war. Because if I have no right coming to my premises, my church compound, I pay for my premises to come there and disrupt the church and barricade me. If I were not mature to instruct my people to be calm, if I said that gather from here, it's a big fight. There will be people wounded, there will be bloodshed, there will be damages of properties and so forth.
That was Senator Prince Y. Johnson of Liberia speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Former Liberian Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi and a senior member of the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, is denying allegations by Senator Prince Johnson that Nnamdi and President George Weah sent ruling party supporters to interrupt Johnson's Sunday church service. Nnamdi tells me that while he has political differences with the senator, it does not include the use of violence.
First, they will have to determine whether there was an attack per se on his church. You know, the video I just watched shows some people with placards demonstrating close to his church. Clearly, neither did I send them, nor did President Weah do so. So it is quite unfortunate that Senator Johnson will say that somebody sent people to attack his church. It's not true. My disagreement with him is political. It involves no violence. We have a democratic process. He's a member of the opposition. I support the ruling coalition. So, yes, we have exchanges about political views, but that will never go to the point of violence. We are the government. We are the protector of the peace of the state, and we'll continue to do so.
Mr. Nnamdi, what political differences do you have with Senator Johnson? Because he's claiming that the people who went there to his church were wearing some regalia that relate to the ruling coalition. So what kind of political difference do you have with him?
Like I said, I recently conducted an interview where I expressed the fact that his opposition to the president, he's been making a lot of statements that are inaccurate. For example, he spoke in Nimba and said that the president was responsible for killings, which is very laughable. He also said that the developmental activities that are happening in Nimba are not because of the president, which is also true. The road development constructions, that ongoing construction of hospital clinics, all of that are to the credit of President Weah. So I disagree with him very forcefully on the radio, but about sending talks, as he called them, to his church, I have absolutely nothing to do with that. But I just want to say very quickly, there is a video of the incident at his church. Nobody would encourage people to go to one's church and cause disturbances, but he should not exaggerate and inflate what happened to me, an attack on him, orchestrated by the president, myself, the vice president, and the mayor of Monrovia. It's absolutely untrue.
He said that all this criticism of him started from the time he said he would not support President Weah's re-election?
Well, in a political contestation, when you take a side and then you go further to preach negativity and to preach lies in your home county, then expect a reaction.
That was Eugene Nambwe, the former Liberian Information Minister and senior member of the ruling CDC party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. It is time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Argentina, where Nigeria's Flying Eagles on Sunday defeated the Dominican Republic 2-1 in the FIFA Under-20 World Cup opener. Nigeria won the opener at the Estadio Malvinas, Argentina in Mendoza. The Flying Eagles will face Italy next in the Group D tie before playing Brazil in the last group game. The Dominicans scored from a spot kick 21 minutes into the game after Benjamin Fedrick's tackle inside the box that led to a penalty. Staying with football news, in the CAF Champions League, Wydad Athletic Club of Morocco will now face off with record champions Al Ahly in a repeat of last year's final. Record champions Al Ahly qualify for their fourth consecutive CAF Champions League final after edging out Tunisia's Esperance 1-0 in Cairo to qualify 4-0 on aggregate. In South Africa, visiting Wydad Athletic Club remained on course to defend their CAF Champions League title after progressing to the final on the away goal rule following a 2-2 draw with Mamelodi Sundowns in Pretoria. In rugby news, Kenya's National Sevens rugby team has been relegated from the World Rugby Sevens Series following Sunday's 12-7 playoff final loss to Canada at the Twickenham Stadium in London. Defeat meant the Kenyans have lost their status as a core team on International Rugby's Elite Sevens Series for the first time in two decades. The four-team relegation playoff, part of the London Sevens, the 11th and the final stop of the men's season, was a product of the World Series reducing the number of men's teams to 12 from 16 next season to align with the women's competition and the Olympic field. In golf news, Zimbabwean professional golfer Robson Chihoi has won the Zanaco Masters at the Lusaka Golf Club in the playoff over South African Neil Shentikat in just his 11th Sunshine Tour start. Chihoi earned $20,000 as prize money for coming on tops after a tie break separated the duo, who were tied at 17 under 271 and were level at 4 under on the final day. The Zimbabwean, who rallied from third in round 3 to win the title, said it felt good to be crowned Zanaco Masters champion after 3 attempts. In basketball news, Senegalese powerhouse AS Douanes marched into the Basketball Africa League semifinals following Sunday's emphatic 93-73 win over Mozambique's Club Fevereiro de Beira at the BK Arena in Rwanda. Mamoudou Gueye's boys opened up with an 11-2 run to finish the first quarter with a 5-point lead, which they extended to 10 points before halftime. AS Douanes joins Stade Malien and Al Ahly in the semifinals. The pair reached the last four stage after beating Cape Town Tigers and Rwanda Energy Group in the quarterfinals on Saturday. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, May 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices, our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.